This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin Underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Hello, welcome to the Always Be Comedy podcast. My name is James Gill. I am the MC at the multi-award-winning comedy nights, Always Be Comedy. I am joined, as always, by my comedy husband, Always Be Comedy's very own, Tim Lewis. Hello, Tim Lewis.
Hello, James Gill.
The Always Be Comedy podcast is where we sit down with a guest and they curate what would be their dream comedy gig. Who would open? Who would close? What sort of gigging nightmare that they've experienced must not, under any circumstances, happen at this fantasy comedy gig? It's all this and so much more. And by so much more, we often mean quite a lot of gossip. Hello, welcome to the Always Be Comedy podcast. Our guests today, two of the best, Flo and Joan. Tim, the relationship that Always Be Comedy has with Flo and Joan is a special one. The old Venn diagram is a circle. We love them enormously.
Yeah, I think I'm always thinking about who my dream lineup is, and Flo and Joan are showing up more often than not. I think they are just one of the best acts ever, and I genuinely mean that.
Now, Flo and Joan, we've seen the polished stuff, we've seen the new stuff. I will say this, even when Flo and Joan are trying out an idea, and it might be the first time that they've ever performed it out loud, even the new stuff is eye-wateringly brilliant.
There's a sense of fun they have, which I'd say very few acts have more than Flo and Joan. I think very few acts enjoy themselves on stage as much as those two.
There is a general rule of thumb. I read a book about, it's an oral history of Saturday Night Live. One of the writers says that if you write something, this is good comedy advice to any writers out there. Now, this is coming from one of the top SNL dudes. If you write something and it makes you laugh while you're writing it, it's probably funny, right? And I the more we do Always Be Comedy, when you see the person up on stage like genuinely enjoying themselves, it's probably funny. Now, what we don't mean by that is, sorry, Tim, I'm dragging you into this. What we don't remember that is just you like disappearing up your own backside and finding yourself hilarious, but it's objectively not funny. I don't mean that. You've obviously got to put the work in. And so Flo and Joan have got that perfect marriage of they've obviously put the work in. The songs are, yes, they might be silly, they might be fun, but they're invariably incredibly complicated. And the fact that they're having fun while they're doing it, it's impossible to not be won over. It's incredibly infectious. You've got that wonderful thing of the Flo and Joan fans, many of whom are also Always Be Comedy fans, singing along with their songs while also having a great time, because the two of them are invariably, there'll be at least a couple of moments during one of their shows where they get the giggles, and it's a great thing. I would say Flo and Joan are one of those acts, Tim, where you could prescribe them on the NHS. They are good for your mental health.
Yeah, well, we've got a gig with them tonight at the time of recording, and I'm so excited. It's going to be a stormer.
They've got that feel-good factor. Also, if you want to see them, they're with us on the 7th. They're doing a full show run-through, Sunday, the 17th of March, 6 p.m., but then, more importantly for Flo and Joan and why they've done the podcast, in fact, Tim, I probably should have promoted their main thing before ours. Quite selfish. So, right, here we go. The full push. Tim, where are they performing?
They're performing at the Royal Court, which is a beautiful theatre. They're doing two performances on one night on the 20th of March, which is a Wednesday. There's a 7:30 show that sold out. There's a 9:30 show that has, I'd say, a handful of tickets left. So act quickly and see one of the great shows.
So if you've never seen them before and you love live comedy, my God, do yourselves a favour, check them out. Oh, and then also, Tim, at least I've gone full shameless here, they're also doing a work in progress. So once they've put, so the stuff we're talking about is their most recent tour show, Sweet Release. That's what all of this is. And then they're also, with an eye on newer stuff, Tuesday the 30th of April, there'll always be comedy doing a work in progress show, Tuesday the 30th of April. Tickets at alwaysbecomedy.com. And tickets to see them at the Royal Court Theatre, the website, if you Google Royal Court Theatre, Flo and Joan, Sweet Release, tickets are there. I'm on the page now, Tim. And as Tim says, we're talking dregs of tickets left. Wednesday, the 20th of March. As ever, to get in touch, we are at theteam@alwaysbecomedy.com. Theteam@alwaysbecomedy.com to drop us an email and across the socials. We are at Always Be Comedy. Thank you for all your shares with the Stephen Merchant episode. Zoot alors. We were very grateful. Also, any 5-star reviews, you'd be doing us a solid. Please leave a 5-star review. If it could just be the star rating, if you want to bash out a review as well. Great stuff. Hey, and in terms of a 5-star act, please welcome the great Flo and Joan.
Right then, look, thank you very much for joining us. Now, just for the benefit of the listener, and I'm well aware that there'll be a lot of Flo and Joan fans, so they won't need this, but if you're newer to Flo and Joan, I'll introduce them both. So, Nicola, hello, Nicola.
Hello, James.
this has gone so much better than I'd planned. And so natural. And Rosie, hello, Rosie.
Hello, James.
I feel like that was the audio equivalent of, you know, at the beginning of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where they say everyone's name and they have to wave, and they're the craziest waves anyone's ever waved in their life.
I know you guys reasonably well, but the least I can do is a bit of homework. So straight out the gates, how did Canada come about? I knew of this because you mentioned it, but what was the thinking there? Was it to join Second City?
Yeah, it was. I went out first, and I went to Chicago first, which is like the OG Second City. And I just wanted to, I had written one joke. I'd sent a packet of ideas to News Jack and got one joke on and was like, oh, well, this is it. I'm great. And then I sent stuff in every week for the rest of my life and have never got anything on since. But that was enough to be like, okay, I think I might be. Let's try this comedy then. And so there wasn't anywhere, I think at the time I was watching 30 Rock was and remains my top sitcom of all time, TV show of all time. And everyone on it, and then like SNL and stuff, they'd all gone to Second City. So I was like, well, if I want to write stuff like this, and that's what I have to do, that's where I have to go. And I'd never done improv, I'd never done any writing, I'd never done stand-up, but was like, I'd finished uni, didn't really like it, didn't know what else to do. Well, not didn't know what else to do. I was like, I'm going to just try comedy because what else? And so just worked for a couple of years, saved a load of money and just moved to Chicago. And then when my visa ran out, went to Second City in Toronto and you could get like a 2-year working visa. So just did that and was like, if I'm shit, then I'll just come home. But at least I've tried it. So, and then Rosie, while I was in Chicago, I like would obviously like call home or whatever and had said to Rosie, like, I think you'd really like it. Because she's a better, like a good actor and a performer and stuff. And I was like, I think you'd love it. So I left Chicago. Rosie moved into my flat in Chicago. And then when she finished in Chicago, joined me in Toronto.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
I mean, yeah, it's actually literally nearly 10 years to the day that I went. And I think my parents didn't understand it and did it. They were like very supportive, but I don't think they knew it was going to happen until I like, showed them like the flight booking and was like, I'm off, see you at
Christmas.
It was
essentially like taking a gap year, but instead of
drinking fish bowls in Chiang Mai. You were writing sketches with through lines and writing runners and things.
Yeah.
And making up scenes based on the suggestion, pizza.
Yeah.
Right, Nicola, at the risk of sounding paternal and patronizing to the point where you two never speak to me again, that is, I'm going to say it, I'm proud of you, because that is, talk about getting out of your comfort zone to you know, everyone has had that, oh, and then one day I'll move to America and pursue my dream of comedy. But for you to do it, I mean, that's extraordinary.
I mean, it is just lucky that it's paid off, I think, because otherwise it would just be a fun anecdote of, I went to Chicago for a couple of years and did improv, or Toronto rather. So it's nice that it's paid off and that the instinct was right. But it's that like young confidence where you're like, yeah, I can do this. I can definitely do it. I'd never do it now. I'd never do something so insane now. But at the time I was like, I've literally got nothing to lose. I didn't have any, I did a music degree and I was fine at it, but I didn't love it. And I'm a good musician, but I was never going to be a professional musician. So this is like the backdoor secret way of doing it, or being able to say that I'm a musician. But I just didn't know what else. I had no strong instinct of like, well, this is what I can do, except for comedy, where I was like, I'll just try it. And if it doesn't work out, I'll come home and we'll go from there. So we're just really fortunate that it sort of paid off.
Were either of you in the same class or year or what have you as, you know, anyone that might have gone on to say an SNL or the like?
In my improv class, and I wrote with her afterwards, was Megan Stolter. She was in my Level A improv class and we used to write together with another girl called Megan. That's my like one, my one person where we were like, oh yes, like she's, and like you, the same as each other, like you see each other doing more and more. And then obviously over lockdown, people being like, do you know Megan Stolter? And I was like, yes, I do. But, and even in that class, she was amazing. She was just like head and shoulders above everyone and still a little freaky weirdo.
I did David Shaw's improv class over here, all five levels.
Yeah,
of.
Yeah.
And I met, I shared a year with Joseph Morpurgo. It was like having Mozart in your, you know, in your,
yeah,
in your music class. He was just another level to everyone else, you know?
Yeah. There was someone in your class, Rosie, who was, isn't she playing Daisy May Cooper in the Our Country remake or something?
Yeah, I went to a girl called Chelsea who was in my improv class, and we got along really well because we both kind of, she was so great. She took me under her wing a little bit because she lived in Chicago at the time. Yeah, she's doing really well. A lot of people who've had auditions for SNL.
Lisa Gilroy is a really good friend of ours from Toronto. We like did loads of work with her, she was a friend of ours in Toronto.
And she's now like running great.
Yeah, there's like and loads of people where you're just like, they're just. I think it's the we missed it here. I think a little bit, but everyone is just coming up at the same time and just trying shit and seeing what happens. And it's that just really nice new. It feels like the first year of uni where everyone is just a little nerd for this thing and trying to make friends and just be little comedy nerds together. It felt like the uni experience that I never quite, that I thought I'd have, but I never quite got.
Is it, and this is purely off the back of 30 Rock, or were you into US comedy before, you know, as a child or anything?
We were big Simpsons kids. That was like the kind of gateway. And we watched all like the Nickelodeon like sitcoms and things like The Amanda Show and stuff, like the weird, that kind of stuff. But like it wasn't until 30 Rock was the first, like when you just like enjoy them as TV shows, you don't really think about it. And then 30 Rock was the first one where I was like, oh, this feels like it was written for me. And I'd never watched a TV show that felt like that before.
Also, that you mentioned The Simpsons there, that golden era, what is it regarded as? It's something like season 3 through 8 or something. I hope I'm not wrong here. Conan O'Brien, sort of like his era of writing. Yeah. That's not me giving all the credit to Conan O'Brien, but I know that he was part of this golden era of that writing team.
Yeah.
But you find that there are certain lines from that period that are just now part of your everyday vernacular.
Yeah. You don't, every time you have a salad, it's you don't make friends with salad. Like all of that. The pig. it's just a little airborne. It's still good. It's like all of that. And it was like, it was the era as well of like, we were kids when it was on, was it Tuesdays and Fridays on BBC Two? You got one episode on a Tuesday, two on a Friday. You got two episodes on Live and Kicking on a Saturday. Like, we didn't have Sky, so we never got the new ones, but it was just, I remember like we went on a school trip where we went away for a week. And the only thing I said to my mum was, you have to record The Simpsons for me. And the day I got back, I sat down and watched all The Simpsons that I've missed over the week.
It's a great catch up. All I take kids to the zoo, I hate every ape I see.
It's like the monorail, so, like all of, yeah, like all of those songs and stuff in it as well. Sherry Bobbins, If You Cut Every Corner. Oh, it was just perfect. And like, we just, perfect. We were at the age where we had those little sponge brains where you'd go into school and then quote it at everyone the next day.
Just the other day, I mean, I know we could do a separate episode on this. I love taking my girls to things like, they've got gymnastics class and dance class and, you know, and all of that, swimming and what have you. I took them to gymnastics. One goes in first, one goes in second. And so there was me and one of them in the car, and there were like an insane number of birds in a tree, like 100 birds in this tree. And then all the birds left the tree and returned to the tree, and out loud from the monorail episode, I said, "The cosmic ballet continues." Listen, nothing from the Hagar. You know, and rightly so. So when did you both think, right, hang on, we can team up with devastating consequences here?
I think the short answer is we were just living in an apartment together, didn't really have any work, and just tried to do some songs. We both like music. We gave it a go. We had a friend who was hosting a show in a little tiny black box in Toronto. And we just tried it one day. We tried a poem, a sketch, and a song. The sketch was one of the worst things this world has ever seen. The poem went well and made it into the special that we, the first thing we filmed. It was literally the first thing. You wrote it down on your receipt at the cinema.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the song worked really well. We used the song as an encore song in our first Fringe.
Yeah, they didn't like it. And it was naturally worse than the rest of the show. But it was the first Fringe we did, it was the only song that we had that we hadn't sung. So we're just like, well, I guess we'll have to sing this then.
Yeah, if the show went well and people wanted more, we'd be like, I'm really sorry, but
this is the last thing we've got.
It's bad. It didn't make it into the show because it was quite bad, but
yeah,
that's how we're going to finish.
Yes.
So with that first gig, so going to, you know, if the poem smashes at that first gig, was that, do I take it, that was the moment where you think, hang on a minute, we might have something here?
I think so. Not like in such a, like, we might be good, but in a, our feeling is, and like, we've said this a lot, but like, our feeling was always, we'll try it. And if we're crap, we can just not do it again and no one will find out about it. And I think we were good enough to want to try it again, to be like, okay, there might be something here. We weren't like, this is our ticket out of here. Like, we're golden. It was, this wasn't bad. The sketch never saw the light of day. That was like, cool, well, we know what our strengths and weaknesses are. When we do sketches, people hate it. When we talk, people hate. But
I
if we keep singing and talking,
some people died in the audience. They actually died. They passed out because it was so bad. And all the lights now flickered.
Yeah, and then they sort of formed the new skin on the walls afterwards. They kind of seeped through the floor and soaked up.
Yeah.
Which I like playing in theatres where the remains of the people who hated you live in the walls.
Often I think someone's broken through just through, say, sustained excellence at gigging. So from my vantage point, I would have said to you, I think you broke through just by being brilliant over a number of years. But then it turns out people have gone, no, you're wrong. It's because I appeared on this. So what was the moment you two had, you felt you'd popped?
I don't know if we have. Yeah. The first big thing for us, I think, it wasn't we have made it, but it was like a series of like, we did our first ever Edinburgh and we went from Toronto. We weren't living in the UK. And actually,
no,
I might go
you're
back
wrong.
On this.
The first thing
was 2016 song.
Yeah, we put a song online and it did really, really, really well. It was like in the good old days where a viral video was just like old dust. It was amazing. And then we did a gig that was going like really wild and we were like in our jobs texting each other being like, oh my God, this is happening.
I remember I went into work and heard someone in work listening to the video. And it was like a 0 hours. So like there were millions of, like there were loads of us coming in and out. You never knew anyone. And I, as I walked in, was like, there were people gathered around a phone watching it and turned to me and said, oh my God, have you seen this video? And I was like, yeah, that's me. And they had also like speaks to what an impact I have as a human being on people that they didn't even realize. But it was like those kind of moments of like people who you didn't even know, like you'd hear them listening to it and be like, oh shit, okay, this is a thing.
But then we went and did a gig in Toronto like 2 days after it sort of was traveling around to six, seven, eight people. Yeah. Like it didn't change our, it didn't really change anything in our Toronto life. But it did, it's got us an online audience a little bit more, which helped ticket sales and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did the Nationwide app, did that help? I was reading, I recently finished Peter Kay's most recent book, and I'd completely forgotten what an impact those John Smith's adverts had in terms of catapulting into the mainstream. I totally forgotten that. Anyway, I mean, from reading the book, I think that had a bigger impact than certainly I'd realised. Did that help in any way, the Nationwide ad?
For my mental health, no.
No, quite bad, actually.
It probably did open up our audiences, but 100%. It took a long time, I think, to actually get to the audience who were coming for the right reasons, because those Nationwide adverts had to be as family-friendly as physically possible.
Mm.
And they were very sort of, twee. Twee and sweet, and that was the job. And I think lots of people thought they were coming for twee and sweet. And our shows are a little bit, hopefully, less twee and sweet than the adverts. So we did get a lot. We were quite fortunate with tickets. Like Edinburgh, we really felt it. We could, we jumped up to a bigger room. But again, it just took a while for audiences to work out what they were seeing, I think.
Yeah. And I think when people only know you for that, I think the good thing that I felt anyway, I don't know if you did the same way, the cool thing for us was that we had spent 2 years in Toronto doing comedy, but no one in the UK knew about it. So we sort of seemingly came out of nowhere once we moved back here, but we knew that we had, right, like at least we weren't like, we've done one song and now we have to figure out how to put a show together. Like we'd done two Edinburghs, we'd done like, we'd gigged in Toronto, like we were on like gigging, I mean, unpaid, but gigging comedians in Toronto. So at least we knew like, we hadn't come out, like there wasn't as much pressure as I think if you had had one hit song and then had to try and fill rooms of people.
That's a great place to be though, isn't it?
It is. I think it means that like there was probably a lot of skepticism on behalf of people who were like, well, where the fuck have you come from? Or why are you playing? Why have you got this audience off the back of like adverts where when you watch them, you're like, yeah, they're fine. But it just hit a thing in like general audiences, I guess, who, and they were everywhere. Like we'd get mates like texting us, like, I'm in the cinema and your fucking thing is on again. Like they were everywhere. So I think it was, it did help. And also it was frustrating a little bit as well. I think.
I would also say, I think retrospectively, and I understand that we should be so lucky, but it did also put us in, we're in our third fringe show at that point and hadn't even been in London yet for a year. And we all of a sudden had a larger audience and we were having to make lots of mistakes in front of large audiences and we're still working out who we are and what we do. And you do unfortunately have to do it in front of larger audiences. And again, we should be so lucky. And
yeah,
I totally understand that it's a terrible problem to have. I think that was the one thing that sort of affected us a little bit. It was quite hard to work stuff out.
Mm. And not feel the pressure of letting down a lot of people if things don't go well. But also you don't know what they're expecting. Like you know that they're coming expecting something that you're not going to give them. And then you have to deal with the fact that for an hour, people are maybe not going to laugh very much because they want you to sing about mortgages.
So when you say it impacted, you mean because so many people had turned up expecting X and were getting Y?
No, I think a lot of people just knew they were coming to get, like we'd done two Edinburghs by then. So we did have a little bit of an audience already and we had a little bit of stuff online. But there would have been your classic Edinburgh audience who were like, oh, I saw them on the other, I'm going to buy a ticket. That would have been a lot of them, because we went from like an 80-seater room to a 180-seater room. So those 100 people are coming from somewhere that we're not sure of, and we've just done an advert, so it's likely that they're coming from the advert.
Now, this is something I will never experience myself, but there are a few things I enjoy watching more than a crowd singing along to your songs. I mean, hang on, now I'm saying it out loud. No, that is a nice thing, isn't it?
It's mad.
It's a nice thing, yeah.
Yeah.
As long as they're keeping a nice tempo, they're not rushing.
Yeah.
They're roughly in tune.
Yeah.
No, it is really, really nice. We had a gig in Dublin in our last tour show, and it was a standing gig, and people were like dancing and singing along, and we were like, this is what the Rolling Stones must feel like.
They should be so lucky.
I remember we had it on our first ever tour, and we didn't know what a tour show looked like. And a bit like our first Edinburgh, we just sang everything that we had and hoped that was enough. And someone, it was in that same Dublin room, but instead of it being full, there were like 20 people in there or something. And someone shouted out, like, play whatever the song was, I can't remember, like requested. And we were like, oh, I don't know if we know, we haven't sung it for ages. And when we forgot the lyrics, everyone was singing the lyrics for us, which is unprofessional on our part, but also you're like, bloody hell, like you've done your research. Like, it is mad that like stupid little shit that you write in your room together is other people sort of know it and learn it and want to listen to it. It's really cool.
And I'm going to go, this is where I switch into full QVC mode. There is a chance to see Sweet Release. So it's been, we can say it's been recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
There are two gigs on the 20th of March at the Royal Court Theatre, is that right?
Yes, in London, not the Liverpool one.
Oh, God, yeah, that is London excellent.
Is it in Liverpool, the Royal Court? Liverpool?
I think there is a Liverpool Royal Court.
Yeah, the London one, please.
We cannot emphasise this enough. It's in London, please. That's Liverpool, not even as a joke. On the 20th of March. I mean, that's exciting. And that, you know, Tim said before the show, he's absolutely right. That's wonderful that show is being committed to, I was going to say film, I'm showing my age there, but you know what I mean.
To slides.
Yeah. Yeah.
We should do a show that's a slideshow one day. You have to click through each picture to get the next lyric.
You know, like people buy cassettes now and CDs.
Ironically.
They'll be buying those little things that you put in front of your eye and you twist them around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those little, when they're red and you put like the round disc in and you'd click the thing and it would
tick
through.
Oh, that'd be so good.
But unfortunately for us, I was going to say, we're quite an audio act, and I don't think.
Well, you can put your surround sound top of the range headphones in while you look at
pictures of us not moving.
The technology might bankrupt you, but I definitely think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Money comes, money goes.
Money comes, money goes. So if anyone doesn't have a ticket, what can they expect? It's two performances of Sweet Release.
That's exactly that. We're doing a show at 7:30 and a show at 9:30. We're going to throw in a couple of old songs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Probably rewrite some bits that don't work anymore.
Yeah, if there were any bits that you were like, if you watched the tour and thought, they could probably done a better job of that, come back and see if we have, or if we've
made it worse.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just our tour from 2022. So it's just, that again.
But that gives that show that's the right and proper send off for that.
Yes, yeah, and we're so lucky to be able to do it again, because otherwise it just disappears and you just recycle a few bits here and there. But I love the show as a whole because it has a little through line. We do find there's quite a few songs that we can't take from the show because they are involved in the fabric of the show. They don't work outside the show, so it is nice to have the whole thing on little picks, little slides.
I've definitely asked this off stage at Always Be Comedy, but What's the creative process? Does one of you have the initial thought and you take it from there, or is it more collaborative than that?
Works both ways. It's often one of us saying, oh, I thought about this, do you like it? And then we'll see if the other one likes it, and then you'll see if any ideas start to come, and then you'll be like, okay, you go away and write the write the lyrics for that and then come back and we can rewrite it together. It's usually that. Sometimes we are just like eating crisps in our room and are like,
wouldn't it be funny if we did a song about
when this? You say our room, it sounds like we have one square box that we both live and work in and we never leave.
Yeah, it's got no windows, it's got bars. Mm-hmm. We get given porridge at 10.
Crisps the rest of the day. We have like one of those big chutes, you know, in You Are What You Eat, where they have those big tubes and they, from the ceiling, a load of food falls into it. We have one of those, but it's just crisps and it's got a little door at the bottom that we shove our hands in and just take stuff out and then we close it.
And during that, we write songs.
Yeah.
And that's the most normal thing about us.
People want to imagine that you live a bit like the Thunderbirds. I did get that.
Yeah. Like Bert and Ernie.
Yeah, like Bert and Ernie. Have you ever, that's a bit, that's a much better example. Have you, there's never been like a McCartney Lennon Day in the Life esque. Well, that song was my idea. No, it wasn't. It was my idea. There's never been any of that, okay?
Never in a malicious way, but often in when one of us will be like, oh, I'm really proud of myself for that bit. And the other one's like, that was my bit. That was my joke. But I don't care enough about the world, life, myself, anyone to care who wrote what bloody joke. I don't care.
Yeah.
As long as the audience has a nice time, that's all that matters, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Oh, I know. That's all part of the Flo and Joan vibe, isn't it? You know, it's also, I've said this before, that when you two corpse on stage, it is the best thing ever.
That's often the thing that people say is their favorite moment. Like, we spend hours and hours like crafting the most perfect, what we believe the best, nicest, most satisfying songs, and then people are like, isn't it funny when you called her a pig bitch and then you hit her in the face with an egg shaker and fell off the stage? I'm like, yeah, okay.
but those bits can, I think those bits can only work because the rest of it is so brilliant. You know, if it was a crap act, but one of you called the other one a pig bitch, the crowd are not joining in the laughter there, are they? You know, the other stuff better.
My perfect act is watching a terrible show and then halfway through one of them calls them a pig bitch. That's my perfect comedy.
Well, so come and see us on the 20th of March at the room.
She's going to call her a pig bitch in a bit.
You're the pig bitch bit.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
You direct your dream gig. Do you, I don't know the answer to this. Do you two have any pre-gig rituals?
Yeah, kind of.
For a long time, I used to say, have the worst show of your life.
And I'd say, I hope you catch fire and fall down the stairs. And then we'd walk on.
We haven't done that for a long time.
We haven't.
And now our pre-gig ritual is to watch. Yeah, on the tour, we sit and watch Will and Grace and eat some kind of meal deal or something.
Yeah.
Watching Will and Grace, that gets you into that playful, silly mindset as well, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does, yeah. I love that show so much. And you can just tune in at any point. If you tune out, you can tune back in and something's going to be funny.
And there's a fuck ton of episodes of it. So it was that and Parks and Rec got us through the tour. And then you could just pick a random season and be like, I'm going on with season 5, episode 2, let's go. And we just plowed through them. Because they're 20 minutes, so you get through quite a few.
Yeah.
And it's really like relaxing, really chill. We don't have to talk to each other, but you do get to have a nice little laugh.
There are times where Sean Hayes is the funniest human being in the universe.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I think that Karen Walker is one of the best sitcom characters ever written of all time.
Yeah.
Easily. She's in top two. She constantly fluctuates. Her and Selena Meyer, I think, are my two from Veep. I think they're my two favorite sitcom characters of all time.
Yeah.
I think Selena Meyer came from the recent episode. I mean, it's as good as it gets.
Yeah. I've only just watched Veep. I can't believe I let it pass me by. And I'm just on round two of watching it again. I immediately went back to the beginning of it. It is the funniest and most, the acting is so well executed. Everything they play is the truth, but it's just the silliest truth. I love it.
Who MCs the gig?
So we've had to, because there's two of us, we've had to come up with our mutual dream gig.
Yeah.
What we wanted, we play the show a lot called Stamptown, and it's run by the main character is called Jack Tucker, and he MCs the show, and he's got loads of these crazy acts. Who am I, 70? The acts are so kooky. he MCs the gig, and he's just got loads of these clowns that just come on and do stupid bits. It's really funny. We want him to MC the show, right? Him and his band of clowns, loads of clowns, like Josh Glance, Natalie Palamides is always there, Vigo Venn. This all, so basically a big clown show is going to MC our show.
I mean, the Stamptown gig, I mean, that's a lovely thing there, isn't it?
It's nice for us, I think, because it's so mad. We're always like the most uptight thing on it, but it's also really, because there are sort of no rules, it's a really fun place for us to we went on once and just sang the confrontation from Les Mis and then left the stage. Like, it's just dumb. I mean, like, that's the craziest idea we've ever had. But like, it is just like this chaos, and you get to do your 5 minutes, and then, I mean, like any gig, like you do your 5 minutes and then you just get to watch everyone else just be insane and mad.
Yeah. Lots of the joy in their material as well is, obviously there's loads of jokes and whatever, but the tech Johnny is providing just as much of the comedy and the jokes. Like the tech of the show is the show itself. It's so genius. It's so loose, but so tight at the same time. Mm. I love watching it. We can't do that. We don't know how to do that. So I always like watching people just be so good at something so specific.
Mm.
Yeah, I love it.
Great choice. Who would open the gig?
Amy Gledhill.
It's the hardest thing in the world to think of your comedy lineup, because it's a million bajillion people that we'd love to have. But we were thinking we just want a show that is just like silly, happy, funny people. We haven't seen Amy Gledhill that many times, really, have we? But every time we've seen her, she always just reminds me of that person at school who just makes you laugh, who's just like on another table and is like just giggling at you. I feel like a teenager when I go and see her. She's so funny. Good vibes.
She's so funny, and she good vibes, and she's having so much fun up there as well. So, which is so infectious.
Yeah, I was saying, like, we don't know her. We've only seen her a few times, but every time I watch her at the end of the show, I realize that I've been sat like just like essentially gurning at her for the whole show, where I'm smiling so much. That as a performer, if I saw someone who looked like me in the audience, I would never make eye contact with them ever again. I would think that person is troubled. Like, it's just a bit jarring. Like, I would feel unnerved looking at someone looking like me at an Amy Gledhill gig. But I just smile for an hour or however long she's on stage. She's just joy.
Mm.
And a proper gig smasher to go with it.
Yeah. Solid. She's so just so good, and it's such safe hands to open a show with her, or I mean to have her on a show anywhere, but as an opener, to just be like, here you go, you're safe, this is going to be fun.
Great choice. Who goes in the middle?
This is a late entry for us. For our middle, we want an act called Dina Martina, who we saw at Soho Theatre on Saturday night.
Do you know Dean Martina? Mad. Neither did I. Neither did we till
Saturday.
Two days ago.
So please go on.
We were trying to think of how to explain her, because she's a drag performer, but she's performing in drag, but she's not like lip syncing to J-Lo.
It's not like the popular current modern drag that people have been.
And to like describe her as, I guess cabaret is like the overriding word that I think you'd maybe use, but that doesn't do justice to her. She has like lots of video content that's just so funny. Her stand-up is really funny. She sings like parody songs that are amazing. She has like 10 costume changes. It was just like the weirdest, unhinged, purest. I think she's been doing it for like decades.
Did she finish all of her songs by saying explosion, and behind the screens there would just be a 90s style
movie explosion
of an explosion.
Oh, that's superb.
She's just like this unhinged, very unhinged, like these bright red lips. Just odd, absolutely odd. Yeah. But so funny, like, you know, when you can't open your mouth hard enough to laugh. Our friends said they saw her like 10 years ago because they'd heard Paul O'Grady on his radio show talking about him and Graham Norton or something.
Him and Graham Norton, Alan Carr and someone like went to see her and said it was the best gig they'd ever seen.
So our friends booked, and then they've just been seeing her every single year and took us along. It was so funny. She had this great joke. People say you should always dance like nobody's watching. Well, I always like to cook like nobody's eating. and then she won something completely different. It was so good.
She sang a parody of, was it, I don't care how you get there, just get there if you can. And the opening line, her opening line was, you can reach me with longer arms. And I was like, I'm in. Straight in the veins. Yeah. It was, just unhinged.
And then proceeded to list all the ways that someone could reach someone.
It was so stupid.
So does Dina perform at Soho Theatre? Is it a different show each year, or are they performing the same? What's the vibe if someone wanted to check them out?
She's an American performer, and I think she comes over once a year, and it's a new show every year.
Oh wow!
I think it's a vibe. We've obviously we've only seen her once, but from what our mate said, it's every time she comes over, it's a new show.
And apparently, she's the real person who plays her is very as soon as they're off stage, that character doesn't exist anymore. Like it's very separate from their life, apparently.
You can't talk to the person behind it about Dina, which I love. I love that so much.
Because there's nothing worse. Nothing worse than when the person on stage is the person off stage.
Who closes this show?
Billy Connolly is closing our show.
So was Billy Connolly someone that you got into as kids, or is this a more recent thing? What's the relationship with Connolly?
I think it was like a later he was someone who I think we were aware of when we were younger, but before we had an actual idea of what comedy was or what stand-ups were. I think, I don't know if you think the same, Rosie. And now as an adult, I've rewatched things like An Audience with Billy Connolly, and like watched all like the recent documentaries that kind of go back over his stuff. And he's just, I mean, it's, I'm not saying anything crazy that no one knows, but just, he's just the best person at comedy. And I think because it's, what a hot headline I've just given you. What an eloquent way to describe one of the best comedians ever.
I love watching people who are physically funny, but you're not coming to see them be physical. You're coming to see the jokes, but the physical side is doing half the work and you're not even realizing that selling of a joke without feeling cheesy. He just feels like a friend in a pub, just the best friend in a pub, just going for story after story after story. Whenever we watch him at home, we're just like constantly sat there smiling, giggling. Our mum loves him as well. Like, it's just a comedian for everyone. I love him so much. Just a good vibe person. We're going for good vibes on this show.
Yeah.
I think I've taken his physicality for granted. And you're absolutely right. It is, he's extraordinary.
Yeah. I was watching the other day his routine about incontinence knickers.
That's the one I was thinking of in terms of physical performance, incontinence on these.
Yeah, and he walks around that state, and it's on an audience with, so the audience is like Robbie Coltrane and Jubilee Walters and Barbara Dixon or whoever.
Did you just and say Jubilee like, Walters?
Yeah, Jubilee Walters.
Jubilee Walters.
Jubilee Walters.
Jubilee Walters and Barbara Dixon.
Barbara Dixon and Robbie Coltrane. Robbie Coltrane. And he doesn't, for like minutes, he doesn't say anything. He just walks around the stage miming, being at a club with, oh my God, I know you said being at a disco. What am I, like 10? Being at a club and dancing as you're filling up your incontinence knickers and then walking around the stage, dragging his massive, heavy, piss-filled legs. And he doesn't say anything. He just dances and walks for ages. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
You mentioned Judy Walters there. With the Gill family has a game where if we're queuing, this is involving extended family. So if you're queuing for a ride at the amusement arcade or at Centre Parks or whatever, amusement arcade, theme park, you know, you have to think of a famous person and the other people, moms, dads, grands, granddads, etc. They guess, but you're only allowed to answer yes or no. So is it a man? Yes. Are they American? Yes. Is it a musician? You know, it's that game, right? But yeah. It usually takes 7 or 8. Guesses to get there, right? Yeah. And it was my mom's go, and she went, okay, my go. And I went, is it Judy Walters? She went, yes, it is.
And they're in those audiences with their big blown out 80s perms.
Yeah.
There's like half the audience in there because they only need 2 seats for their hair.
Do you not think that gig? The audience with that, I mean, that on paper, that's a hard gig.
Yes.
And he annihilates it.
Yeah.
It's like the old version of specials, really, isn't it? Because you're going to have to plow all of your actual material. But like, why you have to still, you'd have to write into your show, this 5 minutes needs a question at the beginning that Pat Butcher from EastEnders is going to ask me.
Yeah.
And that will be the answer. Like it's really contrived, but their performance, the naturalness of it is done so well, which I think audiences now or comedians now would cringe at the idea of someone saying you've got to adapt your bit to someone asking you a question. But at the time, they just do it so well.
Billy Connolly and Victoria Wood is the other one, her audience with. They're just like perfection.
Yeah. I'm so nostalgic.
They are two of the best. They said you got to do a gig and there'll be a weather girl from ITV, there'll be a newsreader, there'll be Judith Chalmers, there'll be this person. You'd be like...
And then like someone insanely famous. So it's like a bunch of like sort of fine people and then like Dame Helen Mirren.
This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. When you want the best, you have to act fast, especially when hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people before the competition scoops them up. And the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds top talent fast. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Spotify. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Has there been an incident that you would love to somehow replicate at this gig?
Wendy said earlier that you like it. You like it when we do something goes wrong or whatever. I always like those moments to replicate. But you, when you try and replicate them, they never work. So I'd always hope that something goes wrong and that becomes the main thing of the show. That becomes the funny through line of the show. I can't think of it. Is there an example?
It didn't go wrong, but I think once there was like one gig where you, I think I'd said something to you and then you sang like a line from Les Mis. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, and Edinburgh Stand.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. I think I said on the offhand was like, oh my God, you sounded like Jean Valjean when you said that. And then you started singing The Confrontation. And then I've played it before in my life. We've never sang it before in our lives, but we played the entirety of the Les Mis Confrontation, or it was like One Day More or something. But the whole audience started piping up and like singing as well. Which if we had to pay PRS on it, then we'd be fucked. But at the time, it was just one of those like, well, we're in it now, we might as well finish it.
And like, all the rooms started to like separate into their little, you know, in One Day More, everyone sings different bits. Like everyone in the room decided that they were going to be, that group is Thénardier. And it just all, for like 7 minutes passed, we were passing the mic, I had the mic on the stand and was just going to each room. Those moments. But you, if you try and make it happen, it's never good. I always hope for a massive mistake in a show. That's probably the short answer there.
That's a great answer, though, because when you're in that moment and it all happens spontaneously, that the lamest thing. I mean, that's beautiful, isn't it?
On paper, if someone said they went to a show where that happened, I would think it was like the most excruciating thing in the world. And yet we were sat there with our conductor's batons, waving a big red. We ripped one of the tablecloths off, waving it as a big red flag. Like, once you're in it, it's so stupid and so dumb.
Has there been an incident that must not happen at this gig?
It cannot be in a room that has massive ceilings and no fabric or no absorbent material.
Yes.
So it's less an incident. Yeah, it's not an incident, but like every now and again we'll gig somewhere and then you get there and it's like a church or like just a room with like the highest ceilings in the world where the best sound person in the universe can't balance our stupid lyrics, which means that the audience can't
hear. Not playing the show. We're watching the show.
No, wait, this is for us, right?
No, this is for our perfect show.
Oh, well, in that case.
But I still agree. I still stand by that. I mean, rule number one, let's not have the gig in a church.
No, but Union Chapel's really cool.
Apart from Union Chapel. But still, I find the acoustics hard in this. I like dead sound in a room. I don't like echoey. I don't need a music venue. I need precision of word. Let me get the joke through so well. But that is based on the fact that we've done comedy in so many rooms where I'm going to blame the room, not our bad jokes.
Yeah.
But where the gig goes so bad. And I think on so many occasions it is because of the height of the ceiling in the room.
I also, it means that like, if there's no absorbent material, then the sound is just like screaming straight upwards. So the audience can't hear it. So they don't laugh. Or if they do laugh, we can't hear it because their laugh shoots straight up. And then the silence in those rooms manages to echo in itself. Like there is no sound and yet you can hear the echo of nothing. It's so humiliating.
This is probably the nerdiest answer. I'm so sorry.
The acoustics of the room must be perfect.
Because the jokes just, they just disappear into the ether.
No one can hear anything. And it just, everyone, the audience feels like they're not getting anything. And then the comic, we're really bad at, actually, no, let me take that back. You then get deflated because as a comic, because you can't hear anything coming back. So you're like, cool, well, I'm just dying on my hole here. And the audience is like, well, as far as I'm aware, you haven't said anything yet because it's just shot straight into the pulpit and then out the windows. We played a gig once in a room that had the biggest ceilings ever, no walls, and it
no walls,
no walls, that's not what I
we
meant.
Played
no...
earth we played mother earth
yeah we played the desert
No ceiling, no walls.
Yeah, no ceiling, no walls. It was one of these like big cavernous rooms that was just not designed for, I don't think comedy, we shouldn't have been in there.
It was designed for men from the 1500s to come and talk about where their pennies should go and why the milk is off.
And in the process of us getting to the stage, we had to do it in the dark, and Rosie fell over a monitor. And so in the dark,
I did not just fall. I was thrown through the air. Gravity stepped away from me that night, launched me into the air and slapped me down onto a monitor like a wet pancake.
A big fat monitor as well, like a big chunky boy.
The whole strip of my leg had gone. There was no skin on the top of my shin.
And when you say about like things going wrong and the lights came up, I pissed myself laughing because she was on the floor. And we were singing Drank Too Much, where I was like, well, this doesn't look, this is dumb. And was like, I'm just going to stop a second, and said, are you all right? Because she was in a pile on the floor.
The audience the audience were all at level. They weren't on a rake. So most people could only see sort of like from our hips up. So they couldn't see that my left leg was bleeding. They just heard probably a thump and the lights coming up and us being like, ah.
And I was like,
I had no idea what was happening.
No. And we had to stop just to be like, I'm just going to check. And when you rolled your trouser leg up, it had no skin on it.
it was
a full, like, knee to ankle, skinless, bruised, like, beef leg. It was so...
Not my fave. The night of the beef leg.
Yeah. And the sound of you hitting the floor echoed up those walls.
Yeah.
And then Rosie... From your point of view as well, if you guys watch Will and Grace to get you into that playful funny mood, for you that is not appropriate pre-gig, is it?
You know what? No, any risk to my health pre-gig is not fantastic. We had to stop the gig for 15 minutes. We had to say sorry. I think I actually just need to. Old me would have carried on the gig and let the adrenaline take on, but this gig I was like, no, I actually have to stop. And you all have to wait because I need to just check that my bone is still there.
And then you had to do the rest of the gig not in shoes.
Yeah, I learned something about myself that night. I've grown as an adult.
That's not cool.
Mm. Yeah, really cool stuff.
But I think because the audience couldn't see what had happened, they were just like, why have we just had an interval and now you're leaving the stage again? And we couldn't like very well, I couldn't put you on my shoulders and be like, show everyone your leg, Rosie. Show them what happened.
I think you made the right call, though.
Yeah. We will not be returning to that venue.
Or any venues with high ceilings.
Dana Carvey listens to It's Getting Better all the time. It's Getting Better by the Beatles, you know. So he listens to that just before going on, right? Because it's a nice, playful, makes him feel silly. If you said to Dana Carvey, just before you go on, I'm going to kick you as hard as I can in the shins.
It's not on your to-do list.
It's not.
No. Now, how do you guys unwind after a gig?
If we're coming home, I try and get to Tesco Express in time to get a bag of Haribo and then sit and watch some kind of horror film. I like watching thrillers or something scary after, like, before I go to bed, just to sort of... I need something really focused and really high stakes to relax me. I think the scariest film I've ever seen is Hereditary because it was psychologically very scary.
Why has Toni Collette not got 10 Oscars?
I think it's a phenomenal film. It didn't make enough of a cultural stab. I think it's scary because it's acted so well, even though it's still nonsense, but it was a film that sat with me for a long time. I still felt scared about it a few days later. I was still on edge.
And that stays with you in that movie as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only ever watched it twice because I have to really amp myself up to watch it. I don't know why.
Nicola, how do you unwind after a gig?
I watch the most brain dead TV in the world. I need to like unwind. I will do a drag race. I will often just sit with a drag race, something that I've seen before or something. So I like recently I've been watching, there was only 3 episodes, The Year That Rocked Irish Dancing. Just something soft, gentle. There was a period in, I think it was 2018, 2019, in the run-up to Edinburgh, all of like the work in progress and as it's all amping up coincided. I don't watch it anymore, but it coincided with Love Island. And that was a really nice regular, you've done the gig, it's gone middling to bad, middling at best, I would say. And just being able to come home and watch something that I don't have to think about, I don't have to judge it, I can just have some kind of noise and then also follow the sort of vague bits of drama or storyline that they've created. And then as a nice treat in Edinburgh in the first week, you get to celebrate with a finale. but I do not watch that anymore. I think it's awful. But at the time, Love Island was the thing where I was like, I need to like lobotomize myself for a couple of hours before I fall asleep. And I drink a big, big fat cup of tea and watch some kind of mind-numbing TV.
You drink tea before going to sleep?
Yeah. At any time of night. I will go to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and I'll have a cup of tea before I go to bed. It'll be the last thing I do before I go to sleep.
You've taken on hero status. I can't imagine. The bravest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, it's not decaf either. It's proper tea. I can't drink decaf. It tastes like pond water to me. I think I just
Mate,
drink
you're like
so
Bear Grylls to me now.
This is my jumping into an ice pond or whatever. My Wim Hof is drinking a double mug of strong Tetley or strong PG Tips.
Tetley,
half an hour before I go to sleep, not Tetley.
PG Tips all the way.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you very much for being so generous with your time. I'm sorry that I asked so many questions, but goddammit, you're so interesting.
Amazing, thank you.
The wonderful Flo and Joan there. Tim, that was a slightly different episode in that I was in South Africa in a hotel room. I was away with work. And it was lovely to see the three of you.
Yeah, it's one of our famous international episodes. Yeah, very exciting.
So, great work there, my friend. Now then, favourite Flo and Joan memory.
Okay, so mine is from last year when Flo and Joan were picked to do a song for Comic Relief. They warmed it up at ours a few times, but on one of those occasions, Harry Hill was in. I think this might have been my favourite memory for Harry Hill episode. It was, so they did their Comic Relief song, which is an absolute banger. Go seek it out. And in the break, Harry Hill couldn't stop singing it. And that is my favourite memory.
I'll just say this now. Tim Lewis, 3. James Gill, 0.
Well, let's see.
Harry Hill, mate, now that you've said it, he was walking down the stairs.
Yes, he was.
I think for the corridor photo, singing the chorus from the depth of his soul.
Yeah, he had heard it once and it was already in his head. Amazing.
He'd heard it once and was singing it as if it was a chart topper that had been around for weeks.
Yeah, loved it.
Tim, yours is better, and I mean the 3-0 thing. So I remember seeing them. I've warmed up a few shows that Flo and Joan have been on, and I love them so much, and it's always great to see them. I'm pretty sure, right, I think it was Leeds Reading Festival. I saw them there and I was emceeing Leeds Reading and they went on and they were just brilliant. I think the Russell Howard Hour, I was warming that up and they went on there and they were great. But I think it was Stand Up Central. It was a good few years ago. And I think it was the season Rob Delaney was hosting. I could be so wrong here. Anyway, one of the things I love about doing TV warm-up is when I bump into pals from the circuit, and then I watch them, and I know I sound like a proud dad here, and I don't mean to, and it's lovely to watch a pal go out and roof a TV show as I'm watching from the wings, and that was one such example. And they went on, and they sang, is the name of the song, I Drank Too Much?
Yeah.
I drank too much, da-da-da-da-da-da. Which is, it's an absolute toe-tapper. It's one of their, I mean, picking favourite Flo and Joan songs, it would be easier to pick favourite Beatles songs, put it that way. And so any time I'm watching pals annihilate it on a TV show, it's such a lovely thing. And that was a very happy memory. And they did a great song justice with a great performance. Tim, I'm happy to acknowledge that was 3-0. Tim, when they walk into a room, this is gushing even for me, but when they walk into a room, We love seeing them so much. They're top dudes. Great for a chat.
Oh, so great for a chat. They love musicals. I've got a real soft spot for musicals. I mean, me saying Flo and Joan love musicals is so obvious. But yeah, I love having a chat with them about all that sort of stuff. We talk about theatre. I feel very highbrow when we're in, actually. I'm going to say that.
Speaking of musicals, Tim, the Milton Jones Ha Milton poster is the talk of the circuit right now.
It's so great. The title, it's such a perfect Milton Jones title. It's so great.
Tell you what, I'm going to write this down. We can even talk about this on our upcoming Comedy Legends episode.
Yes, please. Out this Friday.
Tim just said it. It's out this Friday. Should we spoil who the first episode is?
Yeah, let's do that.
It's sort of a no-brainer. It has to be Jasper Carrot. So the first episode of our spin-off bonus episodes, it's called Always Be Comedy's Comedy Heroes. Episode one is Jasper Carrot. Regular listeners will know that it sort of picked itself because Jasper is a name that comes up a lot. We think is, frankly, bizarrely overlooked. You know, the likes of, say, Billy Connolly, Victoria Wood, Morecambe and Wise are still talked about a lot to this day, and rightly so, but we just wonder why Jasper, old JC, isn't talked about as much as he might be. So Jasper Carrot is episode one, out this Friday. And we're back next Tuesday with the regular Always Be Comedy podcast. For upcoming shows, please visit our website, alwaysbecomedy.com. Tim Lewis, thank you, as always.
James Gill, thank you, as always.
Have a lovely week. Bye-bye-bye-bye. We'll be right back.